Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast. All right. This is Middle Screen making this point. Middle Screen texting in. Coach Middle Screen, loyal listener. The weather's so bad where he is, he's at home today, so he can listen to all 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, because he's a teacher.
Yep. He says that and I'm assuming he's talking about Mixon alluding to fireworks, that Nick has something cooking, is what the word he used. He said that could be just a vote of confidence for Nick, not a specific thing. I would agree, except where he said, I know for a fact.
A fact.
I know for a fact that Nick has something cooking. Like, that implies to me, that implies specificity to me.
All right, now, we're going to have to, everything you get is Lopez's opinion on this.
Oh, yes.
Lopez sometimes will state his opinion as a fact.
Yes.
And it's not that he's trying to be misleading intentionally or anything. It's that I feel like he believes so strongly in his opinion that he's stating it as a fact.
Okay, got that.
So we'll have to get Lopez. Well, Lopez is a connoisseur of using that as a term. We'll see.
I just wrote down toss Lopez on mix and cut. So we'll play it for Lopez and get his take on it. All right, you ready to get petty, my friend, on the petty cast?
Yes, I'm ready to stay petty.
All right, so let's...
You don't have to get petty if you stay petty,
that's
Sean.
Exactly, the old saying.
Yes.
All right, this is one a little off the grid, but I would imagine a lot of pettiness in Washington over this after the way that Detroit game went in the divisional round. I mean, Washington was... Like, if you didn't know anything about either of those teams' regular seasons and you watched that game, you'd be like, yeah... Wow, Washington is just, this is a much better football team than the Lions are grab bagging here. They're the team that's flinching. They're trying to run trick plays and whatnot.
Yeah.
Washington is just, Jaden Danielsing the hell out of them. Neil Rule is the name of a media member up in Detroit. And it looks like he has a streaming show called Big D Energy.
Oh, okay.
The Lions show.
Yeah.
It's a really good show name. It's a great logo. It's a really nice studio. However, this is a really bad prediction that he had on how that game would go. This is early in the week leading up to the divisional round.
You want Detroit, then you got Detroit.
Yep.
And Commanders fans, Detroit's got you and your third worst rushing defense in the NFL and your rookie quarterback and just an insane environment Saturday night where we got all day to get right, if you know what I mean. You have no concept of what you're walking into. None whatsoever. We are 60 minutes away from hosting an NFC championship game. And if you thought that I was going to roll in here today and just be calm about that and say, let it play out and stuff like that, I will not. And this, we can just record and run back tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday, I'll be even more extra about it. We are 60 minutes away from hosting the NFC championship game here in Detroit to go to the Super Bowl. We are 60 minutes from... You think that you're going to walk in here and stop that from happening?
Stand on business, Neil. Stand on business.
And your awful defense and your rookie quarterback? You think you're going to stop that? Ain't no way.
Payne.
Well, how'd that go? This is honestly, this is a hard one to be petty about. That was pretty damn good, man.
It was a good promo. He cut a good promo, but the people in Washington are basically like sending that back to him on Twitter all week.
Oh, how do I be petty about this? Oh, that was good. That was really good. I like that. I think this, though, this is where it's pathetic and awful and weak. It's that Detroit's trying to act like something that they haven't yet proven that they are.
Correct.
It's that, man, listen, you don't go from being the beleaguered, you know, just a worthless sibling of the bunch to all of a sudden being the big dog without having proven it first. Yes. And I think there's a level of cockiness there that, if listen, nobody's buying it, man. You're Detroit still. You're Detroit until you're not. And they're in this, they've learned about, is it the wealth effect? I think this would be like the wealth effect, where it doesn't matter like how high you keep getting more and more money, and you think like, oh, I'll appreciate it. Of course, I remember what it was like when I was poor. Like, no, you keep wanting more and you spend more, and then you gotta have that. That's where they are right now, is they're realizing like, oh, okay, boy, we have all these nice things, but we're still not there.
Right.
We're not actually the big dogs, and it's got to drive them insane that they're right on the precipice of it.
Yeah.
They're like the Andy Reid's Eagles teams back in the day.
Yep.
Right now you're kind of an afterthought in terms of being taken seriously until you prove that you can get over that hump. And part of the problem with Detroit right now is that I would imagine most Lions fans are probably getting increasingly frustrated with Jared Goff because he just does not show up in these big-time moments.
Well, stop chanting his name everywhere you go. That whole
thing. He's just he's not the guy.
Mm-mm.
He's not the guy. He wilts in the moment. And I think that you can't be that cocky when it is still ultimately the guy who Sean McVay said, you know what? You know who you really need is a guy like Matt Stafford. But who would ever relinquish a guy like Matt Stafford?
The Lions.
Why'd everybody? Yeah. Oh, it's you, Detroit. Yeah. Yeah. The wannabe big dogs. You got rid of the guy who can actually perform in big moments.
This gets very interesting. Detroit gets very interesting with these two coordinators going out the door. You know, with Ben losing, especially Ben Johnson and the job he's done to at least get Jared Goff regular season elite. You know, but the playoffs are a different story. Good job, man. I knew you could do it. I knew you could get
it. Could turn petty?
Yes, I knew you could.
Reclaim my pettiness?
Yes, I knew you had it in you. All right, Mick Cronin. Who knew that the UCLA head basketball coach would show up?
I hate this guy already.
For the second week in a row. I hate him too. So last week, he was rambling on and on about how he's the only one that brings any energy to practice.
He's the only guy who's worth a damn, basically, right? On his entire team. He's the only guy that works hard and all that.
Yeah, reminds us that he's won 500 games and he doesn't even really need to do this at age 53 if he doesn't want to.
That's how good he is.
Listen to this. He gets asked a question about the dynamics. UCLA in the Big Ten now is having to travel east a lot to play basketball games. So he was asked by a reporter, I don't think an entirely stupid question. You know, you get all these press conferences throughout the year. You got to come up with different questions. This reporter, take a listen, just asks about, hey, is there an effect of the East teams traveling to the West? And listen to Cronin get his panties in a wad.
So much has been made about you guys going East. You just came back from a prolonged East Coast trip. I'm wondering, have you seen anything from the teams that have to come out here and stay out here? Is there any kind of balance with that in terms of the wear and tear and just what you've seen on the court?
Wear and tear on them?
Yeah.
Is that a joke? Please tell me that's a joke.
Is it even comparable, is essentially what I'm trying to say.
Have you ever looked at the NBA stats and what the gamblers and all those people do on West versus East? Talk to Eric Musselman, ask him that question, who coached in the NBA. Good luck, West going East. Okay, and ask me UCLA's record east of the Mississippi in the last 20 years. Because when I got the job, I looked it up for scheduling purposes. It's under 500, okay? We have to go back four times. Oh, the Big Ten teams get to come to Los Angeles where it's 70 degrees one time a year. They don't even have to switch hotels. We're 12 miles apart. Are you kidding me? Please tell me you're kidding me. Is this a plan? Is this a planted question? I mean, you cannot be serious with that. And meanwhile, we've seen the Eiffel Tower, or we've seen the Statue of Liberty twice in the last 3 weeks. while we were landing. We also saw the Capitol building. I mean, you kidding me? I mean, you can't possibly, and we still got to go back. And then we got to go back for the Big Ten tournament. Right. I mean, you can't possibly be serious.
Well, that's the thing. You have four more trips of those to make.
Yeah. They do it one time. You can't possibly stop. I'm going to eat, man. You can't. I mean, he's asked me to feel sorry because Iowa had to come to L.A. for a few days.
No, he's asking you a question.
He's asking you a question that you could answer.
This guy's such a jackass.
I hate him so much.
Oh, I hate him too. I hate him too. Wormy little bald-headed nerd.
He's so impressed with himself.
Oh, my
God.
There
are a lot of coaches that are very successful coaches who basically don't personally embody any of the things that they would request or demand of their players, which
he's
is that
one of them.
They're very effective whiners. They whine and whine and whine, and it's an effective strategy if you do it with enough bass in your voice. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does. Which also, going back to last week's rant, where he's like, "What do I have to prove? What do I have to prove? I've got a bunch of wins." Like, all right, yeah, in the regular season, I mean, you're 500 in the postseason in your career.
Yeah,
he's made it to the how many times has he made it to the Final Four? Once.
Once
he made it to the Final Four once. Like, he was like, okay, I would think that for me, if I were a head basketball coach, I'd like to win a national championship at some point. Like, act like I do. I still do have something to prove, and that what you don't try to paint yourself as like the noble benefactor who's even like, I don't even have to coach. It's just they're lucky to have me.
Yeah.
Dude, just save it, you selfish SOB. Yeah. You're like the rest of them. You want to win a championship.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep, yep. He's bad.
He's a professional whiner.
He is.
He's no better than you and I.
Right.
That's what we do.
That's it.
I own it at least.
That's it.
I'm a professional whiner.
Yeah.
I get on the radio and I get petty about stuff.
Yes.
You're trying to cloak yourself in nobility. Like you're just some kind of you're gracing the sport with your presence.
Mick Cronin. All right. Tom Brady. I don't know why Brady had to take this swipe at Dan Quinn and Arthur Blank, but while doing the NFC divisional round game on Saturday night, he made a reference to Dan Quinn. I guess the owner, Josh Harris, had come down to the sidelines towards the end of that game, the owner of the Commanders. And we all remember it happened right here over at NRG Stadium, Arthur Blank coming down to the sidelines during that comeback from the Patriots from 28-3 in the Super Bowl. Here was Tom Brady during the telecast of the Lions-Commanders game on Saturday.
7, down by 14.
I'm not sure Coach Quinn likes owners coming down on the field before the game's over.
Yeah. Pretty good.
You know what? Brady made another comment in that game about they had referenced his partner there, Kevin, what's his face?
Burkhart.
Had referenced the A.J. Brown reading a book on the sidelines last week or a couple weeks ago. And Brady said he'd never seen that. He's seen a quarterback eat a hot dog on the sideline. Just a shot at Sanchez out of nowhere.
Yeah. Brady's got, I think to be at that level, you got to have a level of pettiness to you.
Brady
right?
has a good level of pettiness, like a competitive pettiness to him.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, my feeling about coaches and quarterbacks. I don't want them to be mentally healthy or have perspective in life. Hey, you gotta have a little psycho to you, like Michael Jordan and Tom Brady. Like those dudes have a certain almost mental illness about them that drives them that might drive others like completely useless, but it makes them great. I feel like I think Brady's got a pettiness to him that he uses to his advantage.
Would you like?
He probably, as he says that, it might just be a little innocent offhand comment.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a part of that that it was still like, oh, this is supposed to be the young hot guy in the AFC East at one point.
Right.
I remember him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember what we did. Yeah.
Yep. Do you think CJ should be a little more unbalanced? Is he a little too balanced, do you think?
No. I think he's a guy that, he would have a tendency towards an unhealthy obsession. His battle is just dialing it back enough that it's passion and not obsession. And I'm speaking kind of loosely about,
sure,
you know, Jordan and Brady, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Brady's that same way. Of that, like, there's a he's got to learn how to tamp it down a little bit, but that's what drives him. With CJ, I think he's got an obsessive personality,
mm-hmm,
and for him the challenge is like, all right, just keep it reined in enough that I can still roll with the punches and come back from the losses and everything. It's a good problem to have.
Yep.
It's a constant battle for just remaining. You want to be just over the edge of mentally healthy. You know, like, you don't want to be totally well-adjusted, but you just want to be just over the edge.
Mind straddler.
Crazyville.
Yeah. Yes.
You want to flirt with Crazyville.
Flirt with Crazyville. I like it. Speaking of that, Rob Gronkowski, he's flirted with Crazyville many a time, I would say. We're playing this one because Rob Gronkowski, I think, shares a sentiment that Payne and Pendergast do, particularly Payne. He hates the Indianapolis Colts almost as much as Seth does.
I just dislike the Jets. You know, I don't really have a hatred for the Jets. It's just our rival in our division. But and it was at the beginning of my career. But yes, the Colts, let me tell you, I do not like the Colts. I was just on Julian's podcast, Names of Games, actually. And we absolutely just dismantled the Colts. We ripped them apart. They were hanging banners for winning a division. They were always a little cocky, always talk garbage when they played us. We just romped them week in and week out every time we played them, especially in the playoffs. I don't like the Colts. I always loved, you know, running up the score versus them. We dominated them in the pass game and in the run game as well. And we were dominating them so bad that they came up with that Deflategate BS because they needed an excuse why we were absolutely terrorizing them.
Yeah, that part too, especially, is that the Colts were a finesse team, whereas the Patriots were still very much a bash you in the face, blue collar type of team. And I always enjoyed watching the Patriots when they'd line up with six offensive linemen and just run for 290 yards versus the Colts. I enjoyed when Teddy Bruschi said, he basically paraphrased Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men and said something about getting the Colts don't like to get their pretty white uniforms dirty.
Yeah.
I loved and relished all of that. But then, yes, especially the Colts planting the Deflategate theory into somebody's brain and trying to complain and whine about that was a classic team that couldn't get it done, trying to find some way to get it done not on the football field.
Yes.
So I fully endorse Gronk's hatred for the Colts.
Do you?
It was pathetic the way the Colts behaved when they couldn't beat the Patriots.
Do you remember the score of the game, the AFC title game, that where the Deflategate accusations stemmed from?
It was a bludgeoning, right? And they barely passed the ball, right? What was the score?
I'm trying. Pro Football Reference is stuck right now. I believe it was 45-7, if I'm not mistaken.
And I think that was one of the games where the Patriots lined up with six offensive linemen a boatload of times.
Probably, yeah. Like, just
they just completely physically destroyed the Colts, and then that stupid old inaudible, indecipherable owner of theirs just decided that, like, no, there's got to be some other reason. It can't possibly be that my guys are punks. Yeah.
45-7. The Patriots beat the Colts that day.
How many yards did they rush for?
The Patriots?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Patriots rushing. Oh, my God. LeGarrette Blount had 30 carries for 148 yards.
Yeah.
With a long of 22, so there wasn't like a 70-yarder in there. Like,
it was just a constant procession. What were the team stats on the rushing?
On the rushing, they only really gave the ball to LeGarrette Blount. Jonas Gray had 4 carries for 4 yards. Shane Vereen, yeah, 1 carry for 2 yards. The running backs had 35 carries for 154 yards in that game.
Yeah.
So they, yeah, you're absolutely. Now, Brady still.
Well, they did it with deflated footballs, Sean. As everybody knows, you can run the ball well when you got deflated footballs.
Brady did throw the ball 35 times in that game, but I'm not trying to validate their Deflategate thing. I was totally stupid. Poor Andrew Luck in that game, 12 of 33 for 126 yards and 2 interceptions. That might have to be one of the worst games of Andrew Luck's career.
Well, they were Andrew Luck's record outside, and that was in New England?
It was in
that
New England, yeah. Sure was.
Oh, yeah, of course it was, yeah, because of the weather conditions and the balls. Luck, that was the other thing about the Colts, was they were the epitome of a great offense that just sucked in the elements. Like, they were very much a pretty team. And even to the two quarterbacks, I always respected Tom Brady more as a quarterback, even when people were just somehow idiotically thinking that Peyton Manning was a better quarterback. Like, Brady would make the football player plays. Tom Brady was more of a football player than Peyton Manning.
Yes.
Peyton Manning was a great quarterback, but Tom Brady was a great football
player. That's a great way to put it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
God, I hate the Colts.
Up next, I know, I'm glad I slipped that into the petty cast. That got you fired up. I like that. All right, Texans, beware the Texans year 3 curse. What is the year three curse? I will tell you exactly what it is and how avoidable is it for next year's Houston Texans coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Boy, I got somebody riled up with that tease into this topic we're about to do. I said, beware the Texans' year three curse.
Oh.
Guy says, I think he meant shut your trap, guy. But he said he has the I word, not the U word when it comes to shut. But he says, shut your trap, guy. We don't need to hear talk about a curse. Don't be lazy and find new content. Wow.
Oh, that's interesting. Don't be lazy and find... he's saying find new content instead of being lazy.
Right.
So without even knowing exactly what you're talking about...
What the topic is, yeah.
His lazy take is that you shouldn't be lazy.
Exactly.
Listen, there's no... if there's one thing we don't allow on this show, it's in our big book of things we don't allow. It's ironic accusations of laziness.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, unintentionally ironic and lazy accusations of laziness.
Right.
Okay, lazy guy.
Right. So
what's the I word? I have no idea what an I word is.
No. I think he meant shut your trap, but he's got the curse word. Instead of shut, he has SH.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
You're about to make me say it.
You said an I word, and I'm going through my pretty yeah. prodigious vocabulary of dirty words.
No, I meant, what I meant was he had the I instead of the U. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I think it's... Clearly, we know what autocorrect does to your language, sir.
Yeah, what a lazy. You can't even edit your text before you send it, you lazy SOB.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
This level of laziness, violating the first commandment in our Google Doc of commandments of the things thou shalt not do on the show. Unacceptable.
Yes,
it's a mortal sin.
Yep. All right, so here's where I'm going with this.
I don't even know what you're... Year three curses. I have no idea what you're... So, for this guy to say you're being lazy...
Right.
I guess he's calling me stupid also.
I guess. Okay, so here's where I'm going with this. The Texans, in their recent history, they've won eight division titles. It's interesting that they've been won in four back-to-back clusters, right? 2011, 2012, they won the division. 2015, 2016, they won the division. 18 and 19... division, and now these last two seasons. What's interesting is, for a variety of reasons, each of the previous pair of division championships that they won was followed up with literally one of the worst seasons in franchise history.
So that's weird that would be a lazy take, since I wasn't even aware of that.
Right.
Just good job in all of your laziness understanding that.
Thank you. Yeah. So just to go through these, 2011, 2012. In my opinion, still probably the best teams in Texans history, those two teams, 2011. Those are the ones that had the best chance to go to a Super Bowl, I would say, of all the teams they put on the field. They followed up with literally the worst season in franchise history, a 2-14 season that tied for the worst in franchise history. The biggest reason for that one, I would say the Matt Schaub just pick six parade was probably the biggest. Like, Matt Schaub just... lost it. He fell off the earth that year. They had really poor quarterback.
His arm just fell apart. There are also elements of that season that the year before where it just... the fact that the Texans were so good at creating turnovers defensively, it covered up a lot of the blemishes on the offense until the end of the season when everything kind of came to a head. So as as far as whether it's a curse or not, I think like that's where you can look at it in reality and say, more times than not in the NFL, teams will show signs of growth and improvement, and the tendency or the temptation is to think like, oh, here we go. We just got a little bit better this year, and then we're off to the races the next year.
Yep.
But more times than not, it comes crashing down. So how do you avoid that this season? Yeah. Like, how do you keep this growth going?
We'll get to that. I just want to hit the other two times this has happened. Yeah. We'll get to that. The fallout from that, obviously, was you fire Gary Kubiak and Bill O'Brien gets hired, and now you're into the O'Brien era. 2017, this is after they won the division in 15 with Brian Hoyer as the quarterback and 16 with Brock Osweiler. They went on to go 4-12. Now, this is a little bit different. It was a quarterback issue, but it was Deshaun Watson tearing his ACL midway through the season that led to them winning one more game after that. I think they were like 3-4 when Deshaun tore his ACL after that.
Yeah.
Possibly in that Seattle game, but definitely in practice was where it completely tore. And they won one game the rest of the year. They went like 1-8 down the stretch that season. The fallout from that was that the O'Brien-Rick Smith battle came to a head, and the team chose O'Brien over Rick Smith.
Yeah, which was also, and it was weird because, I mean, Rick Smith's wife was sick, which would end up being terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And so it was, but there was change. They brought in Brian Gain, and
I think the Texans would have been better than 4-12 if Deshaun had stayed healthy that year. So that may not be just like a collapse. That was just unfortunate.
But it does speak to like, hey, to the importance of the quarterback position
for sure.
And everything else.
Yep.
If C.J. Stroud had gotten injured this year, I just, with apologies to people that are adamant defenders of Davis Mills, I think it could have been much worse this year.
Yes.
And it wasn't like it was bad this year. They just didn't build on expectations.
That's right. The third time they won the divisions back-to-back, 2018 and 2019, in 2020, they would go 4-12 and Bill O'Brien would get fired four games into the season. Now, I think the biggest reason for the fall-off there was they put Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby in charge.
Yeah, it was. And in a year where the Texans defense completely and utterly collapsed and squandered a 24-0 lead in the divisional round, they did absolutely nothing to make the defense better. They let DJ Reader walk. They let somebody else. But the defense needed help. They didn't do anything to help them. They went out and they made a bunch of really bad, the sum total of it all was a bunch of bad moves.
Yeah.
You could argue for any one of those moves individually, I suppose, but they spent way too much on free agents. They gave up too much in trades. Bill O'Brien, as I think most people tend to feel now, is like, okay, he was a competitive head coach, but he was a horrendous GM. And that was the sum total of that.
And the fallout from that was probably the most drastic out of any of these three instances, because Easterby got empowered to the gills. The roster was left in complete shambles. The salary cap was left in complete shambles. The draft capital you had, shambles. That one was bad. So the question that you posed a few minutes ago, Seth, okay, so they've won back-to-back divisions here. The three previous times they've done it, it's been followed up by atrocious seasons.
Yeah.
And we probably felt maybe some degree of confidence going into those atrocious seasons, you know, like we didn't feel like they were going to be horrible. So I want to be a little guarded about like, no, that can never happen again. But what's the big difference for you now?
There isn't a difference, because it's this. To credit CJ spoke about this multiple times yesterday about how, you know, it's not as simple as like you just come in and you're going to be better and keep doing the same things. You got to build again. If you were to ignore and not address the issues they had offensively, if you rolled out the exact same squad next year and didn't change. Now, there will be a change on the offensive line coaching side of things. If you were to ignore all that stuff, you will have a worse season next year. Mm-hmm. Like, you just flat out will, because everything that happened this year, where teams start to get a feel for what you can and can't do, all of that, if you don't make improvements offensively, you'll be a worse football team next year. So it's just, that is the sum total and really the key and critical issue this entire offseason is, how are you going to fix the blocking issues? It's not just the offensive line. It's the tight ends and the running backs as well in pass protection. How do you figure out how to run the football consistently? I mean, a lot of this is really the nucleus of a lot of it is on the offensive line, but it's more than just that. And then Bobby Slowick, with his construction of a passing offense and a running offense, is Bobby Slowick the guy, and what can he do to improve? They'll be worse next year. So yeah, it would be, I don't know how much worse, but they would be worse. The defense has room to get better, but not as much room. Like, so they can't get so much better that they cover up all of the issues on offense that they had this year.
Yeah, you're on the cusp of an elite defense. You know, like you, if this defense finds a way to stop giving up big plays, and as you pointed out yesterday, getting better at tackling has a lot to do with that. Certainly a lot to do with Travis Kelce going off the way that he did on Saturday in that divisional round game. I feel great about the defense. You know, I feel great about the talent level on the roster overall compared to some of those teams that bottomed out in previous years. But you're 100% right. And to me, the biggest thing with the offensive line, I know they need to get a run game cobbled together here. You're going to get C.J. Stroud killed if you keep allowing, especially pass rushes up the middle the way that you do.
Yeah.
You're going to get him killed. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, that's the thing that could lead to a collapse, is you don't fix your offensive line, and that is what allows C.J. Stroud to get hurt, like Deshaun did back in 2017, you know?
Yeah. So you got to really guard against that. Like, oh, okay, we're right there. We're knocking at the door. We're going to kick that sumbitch in. Mm-hmm. It's harder. It's harder than just staying right where you are. They got to figure some things out.
Text message, someone listening who's behind on the app, but Seth's brought up Chip Kelly's name a couple times today on the show as a potential offensive coordinator for the Texans. To be clear, they haven't made, publicly at least, a decision on Bobby Slowick yet. Text message, I'm behind on the app, but you're talking about Chip Kelly. Looking at Ohio State last night run a screen, I thought, that's how you set up a screen.
Yeah.
Wish the Texans could do that.
Yeah, that's honestly, I always look at how well you run your screens
yeah.
as an indicator of how much attention to detail is there on your offense. And the Texans were miserable at executing screens because the screen seems like a simple enough thing, but when you're going against good NFL defenses, the screen also is a play that has the most tells that you can tip your hand. It's hard, if done improperly, for the offensive linemen to get set up and to block the guys because they tend to be blocking smaller, faster guys in space. And the teams that do it well tend to be pretty well-coached teams.
Yeah.
This team was not, they did not execute screens well at all.
Nope.
On almost every level, it was just, it was hard to watch. And to me, I gotta, like, that might be where I start my meetings off with Bobby. Like, Bobby, why did it look like every single defense knew exactly what we were doing every time we ran a screen? Yeah. Why could the offensive linemen not complete any of their blocks or the wide receivers? Like, what, why were we so haphazard and awful at running screens? Because that to me is, man, these guys aren't being coached up and they're not paying attention to detail in the areas that matter.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a snowy Tuesday here in Houston. Drive safe if you're out there on the road. If you're hunkered down at home, good for you. Good for you. Enjoy some little hot chocolate. Put a little something in there and enjoy your day relaxing with this beautiful snow outside. All right, I return the favor to Kansas City. Carrington Harrison came on last Friday and really, really angered a lot of Texan fans. They asked me to come on yesterday on Carrington's show in the afternoon on our sister station. I'm going to let you guys, our later arriving audience, grade how I did at thrashing Patrick Mahomes on Kansas City radio yesterday. That is next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studio, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. So, yesterday I went on Carrington Harrison's show in Kansas City. Carrington, if you guys listen to this show, you know he came on with us the Friday before the regular season Chiefs game. At the very end of that interview, kind of just cut a promo on the Texans that was very disrespectful. This time, when he came on with us last Friday, he just came right in out of the chute with the disrespect for the Texans. Mm-hmm. You know, just taking them lightly. Hey, you guys are a cute little playoff team. You're not a Super Bowl team. All those things. And
it was insulting in that it almost wasn't even a fiery dissertation or anything. It was just him kind of plainly stating what he thought to be the facts that were that this is just what this is no big deal for the Chiefs. They're just going to take care of business, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. And ultimately they did. I mean, they won the game. So his producer texted me yesterday. His name's Rob, and he said, "Hey, do you guys have any angry phone callers archived from the post game show complaining about the referees and whatnot?" And I said, I don't have anything archived. You can check the Texans app. I kind of directed him to a couple places where that audio may exist. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, he was unable to unearth anything. I thought Texan fans handled the officiating part of it after the game on the postgame show pretty well. There were way more people calling the postgame show, at least by my memory, way more people calling saying, we have to not be traveling for the divisional round like we do all those times.
Well, and it's the officiating is one thing, but it's like any other thing in a football game where there's 140 plays on offense and defense, not even to mention special teams, where, the officials can matter in some very poignant moments, but you don't pin it all on one play or ignore all the other ones. Like those penalties were a factor, but there were enough other factors to point to also that were more within your control.
Yeah, and I think the fans, by and large, the ones that called the postgame show pointed that out too. I was proud of the way Texan fans handled the officiating aspect of it, that they weren't blaming the entire game on it. It was just one area that didn't work out for the Texans. When Rob couldn't find any of that audio to play on their show, he texted me and said, "Hey, would you like to come on at 2:45? I said, "Yes, I would love to come on your show because I got some things to say." I didn't say that to him. But so we did the interview and we talked about how's Houston handling things. And ultimately, we wound our way over to Patrick Mahomes and his act.
The gall that Patrick Mahomes has to abuse the rules the way that he does, I can understand where players after the game, where you're right after the game, testosterone-laden atmosphere. It's a high testosterone zone. Emotions are running high. The game just ended 10 minutes ago. The stuff that Mahomes does to me, Carrington, is disgusting. that he does where he's got a pass out of bounds and he decides to tippy toe back inside, slide down so he can draw an illegal, you know, an unnecessary roughness penalty. The flop out of bounds. Like, I get it. Like, you guys have three Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes. I rooted for James Harden and defended him for years in Houston, so I kind of know the territory that we're in right now. You guys got the titles at least to show for it. But the level of bargaining that has to go on with a fan of a player that flops is tough. And I'm sure there's a ton of Kansas City fans right now listening to me say this, say, we don't really care. We win with the guy. We love the guy. And that's all well and good. I think it's wussy-ish stuff that Patrick Mahomes does, and I hope they legislate it the hell out of the game.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was there for America is what I was doing.
You called him a wussy, basically.
I did.
Or at least somebody who does wussy-ish stuff.
He does wussy-ish stuff. That's like, I didn't call you stupid. I said you're doing a stupid thing. Yeah,
it's local versus global. Key when you're giving feedback. Yeah.
That's right.
Nobody can accuse you of insulting him.
Right.
It is. It's annoying. And yeah, I could totally see Chiefs fans like not caring or whatever. That's just the annoying part of it is that, man, it rubs. In football especially. Yeah. It is. It's annoying when they do it in basketball. It's annoying when they do it in soccer. Don't bring that crap to football. It got to the point in the Bills game where I can't even remember who it was. One of their tight ends got pushed and he fell down. And I had to stop watching the game for a little bit because I cannot handle this flopping in football. And it's for all that's good and holy and American, just stop with the flopping. My God.
What did Ross Tucker was on with us earlier. We had a fun hit with Ross today. He called it the soccerification of the NFL.
The soccerification of the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see, man. Look, Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Soccer fans tell me, though, are the Americans as dramatic about the flopping in soccer as they are in Europe? It feels like the Europeans are just the most dramatic about
They've perfected it, yeah.
Let me know, though, if that's just my own, jingoism playing off or something. 713-572-4610.
Yep.
Educated soccer fans, tell me whether Americans are just as bad in the soccer realm at flopping as the Europeans.
Good question, yep. Text message, Patrick Mahomes on the field. Ooh, this is a take you had earlier, Seth. Has become the same annoying jerk that his brother Jackson is off the field.
Yeah. No, he's the more dramatic Mahomes brother now.
Yep.
Because Jackson's largely been muted, maybe by the law. I don't know. He has it feels like he might be under various gag orders at this point. We haven't heard much, thank goodness, of Jackson Mahomes lately. We do see Pat Mahomes acting like he's the first person that's ever had an ankle sprain in the history of football. He'll play through an ankle sprain, and dadnabbit, he's going to let you know just how much pain he's
yes.
in. Oh, now coach, I'm going to play, coach, you got to let me in there. Do you see how much pain I'm in? What's your argument going in the game, Patrick? Because you're screaming like they're about to amputate your ankle, okay? I don't understand the difference. You really shouldn't be able to run like that and also need to scream like you are. So frankly, I feel like you're being a little bit dramatic.
I'm so mad they lost because I had a video all ready to do that I was going to rip the head off of a Kermit doll, and I didn't get to do it.
Oh, you know the most annoying part of the game? And this is not me blaming, because this didn't hurt the Texans at all, but this was specifically Pat Mahomes being super annoying, was, all right, we know that he's going to flop and gesticulate and do everything he can to try to draw flags, because I'm Pat Mahomes and I need protection. But then the play where Will Anderson got a sack, but Mahomes looked like he thought, oh, I wasn't down. Why did you blow the whistle? Why did you blow it dead?
Yeah.
That is a classic. Like, I want to be protected, but not too much.
No.
You're protecting me too much.
Right.
Let go of my purse. I don't know you.
Let go of my purse. I'm anxious to see how heavily they prioritize this when it comes to the owners and the coaches and the competition committee. It's a plague right now.
The competition committee is a joke.
Yeah.
They outlawed this, the fake slide, for instance, and other unsportsmanlike things like that, like Pat Mahomes is known to do. They outlawed it in 2021 after Kenny Pickett had one that, remember, wasn't nearly as egregious as a lot of the stuff that Mahomes has done. He just kind of took a stutter step and kind of looked like he was going to go down and then kept running at Pitt.
At Pitt, yeah.
And they banned it in college football. That was in 2021.
Yeah.
It's 3 years later, they're still letting quarterbacks get away with it. They're still letting them slide as late as they damn well please, where they are exploiting a rule that's supposed to protect the quarterback. Quarterbacks are now, and Pat Mahomes especially, actively putting themselves into more dangerous situations in the hopes of drawing a flag. It's completely against the spirit of the rule,
yeah.
And Pat Mahomes is violent. This is 10 times worse than Deflategate or anything else that, because it's brazen and it's right in front of us.
Yeah, it's taking advantage of the protection. That's how bad it is, NFL.
Deport Mahomes!
That's how bad it is at college football, the most dysfunctional sport that there is. Nobody can agree on anything in college football. They've actually legislated it out of their game, and you can't do it. You haven't done it yet. Text message, we need smack.
I'd rather let players gamble against their own teams than watch this crap anymore.
watch Mahomes' fake slide. Text message, we need smack off Shawnee when you call other stations that talk bleep next time. I'm happy to do it. They invited me on that show, so I was an invited guest. Maybe from now on, I'll just have to go in as like a caller on these other
stations.
You
could have. I tried to do that once when I was up. I had flown into Buffalo and I was listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I called in, and the mistake I made was I identified myself as a Texans fan. And this is not a station that I go on every now and then, but I wanted to do it. I wanted to do it pure, and I wanted to call in as a caller. And they didn't. And I gave my good take to their producer. I got on, gave like a really good 30-second take.
Yeah.
And I was ignored. I sat on hold for 25 minutes before I had to get off. And I asked one of the hosts who was on about it later, and I was like, "Yeah, that was me." Like the other night, I called in. And he's like, "Oh yeah, you know how that goes. Like sometimes you put on somebody from an opposing team, and it's just not." And I'm like, "I know how it goes when you're scared."
Yes,
that was a call-heavy show. We don't take many calls at all, but that's a show that takes a lot of calls. So I was a little bit offended.
Yep.
So the next time you go on, just do it. Pretend like you're a normal caller. And just do a smack off on him.
I will.
You have 3 minutes of content about Pat Mahomes being bad for the sport.
I will do that. That'll be fun. And we can record it and replay it, and people can grade it and tell me how good or bad I did. All right, college football season is done. College football playoff is over. I'm very sad. Obviously, my team lost last night, but we're done with the first 12-team playoff. How do we like it? What did we think? Let's grade it. How was the 12-team playoff for you? That is next.